I'm Kayla Branch.
And I'm Nuria Martinez-Keel. You're listening to The Source.
Thanks for joining us as we discuss the Oklahomans' most impactful stories with the reporters who wrote them.
This week, fears of the coronavirus reach Oklahoma.
And a string of racist incidents in schools and colleges push administrators to do more.
Reporter Adam Kemp is joining us today to talk about preparations for coronavirus testing in Oklahoma. Adam, this really is my first question for you. Is the coronavirus something Oklahomans should be worried about?
Simple answer. Yes. But at what level of worry, I believe, is kind of the more appropriate question to kind of be asking. Everyone nationwide probably should be concerned a little bit. I mean, it's here, it's in the U.S., it's killed some people in the Seattle area, but in terms of who it affects and at what severity affects is really kind of the underlying and more unknown part still that scientists and researchers are really working to figure out.
Talk a little bit about the preparations that have been made so far to begin to deal with this in the U.S.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So we, Oklahoma as a whole, actually had some of the, not first cases, but we're pretty early on getting some people being investigated for coronavirus while it was still considered to be mainly a Wuhan, China deal. Mm-hmm. Two people were investigated within the second week of the outbreak there in China. Both of those came back negative. They did not, have coronavirus. But the testing has been going on here basically from the beginning. And what the Oklahoma Health Department has talked about is just their preparations, how they're going about it. Originally, it was if you had a connection to Wuhan, China, if you were feeling sick, you need to report it to your doctor, and they're probably going to put you under investigation. In that investigation, they're going to want to know who you talked to, who you saw, what came about, what was your travel like, what time length since you were around someone that maybe had this disease, kind of locking you down, but also making sure, like, are you clear, are you good? So I've talked to a few local hospitals. They have all gone through proper training. They say kind of that's one of the first steps in containing the virus is teaching healthcare workers how to go about treating people with it. So it's how you take your gown on and off, how you put your mask on and off. It's people are training here and waiting for what probably will be an eventuality. Someone probably will get this disease here in Oklahoma at some point.
Right, cause like we were talking about before we came in here, it's to the point where you no longer had to have traveled to China or to Italy or other foreign countries that have unfortunately seen a rising level of infections. All you have to do is to travel to Seattle. But in your story, you said seven people have been under investigation for the disease. I think you clarified that that doesn't mean that they actually had it.
Right, yeah. Under investigation really just means you showed some symptoms and you have had the travel history. Now that travel history can extend to other parts of the United States. So the health department's been very clear about letting people know just because you're under investigation does not mean that person has the disease. Currently, there's only one person investigation. They just cleared another person. So they're only looking at one person right now. And I think that test result will be back within probably before the end of the week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, a big question has been testing, like you mentioned, and I know the State Health Department, and you had covered this, they're talking about getting their own version of the test so they can do them in-state rather than have to send them out, which will take less time. But something that I saw on Twitter that I thought was really interesting, it was a woman from the Seattle area, and she put together this long strand of tweets about her thinking that she might be sick and that she might have been infected with the coronavirus and trying to figure out, okay, so how do I go about getting tested? So she details her experience and basically said, she waited on the hotline for an hour and didn't get to talk to anyone. She called the local health department. She called the local hospital. Then they sent her to an ER, and then they sent her to a different hospital, and then they sent her back to the hotline. And then they basically said, well, yeah, even though you have all these symptoms, you haven't traveled to China, and so we're not going to test you.
Right.
And so she was, you know, expressed some anger, some frustrations there. So talk a little bit about, you know, what are people supposed to do if you think you might be sick?
What the health department here has said is you need to give, if you're experiencing symptoms, if you believe maybe you've come in contact with someone that has the travel history, or like they said, has the disease itself, you've probably already been contacted by the health department at that point anyway. But if you are experiencing symptoms, contact your health provider, give them the lowdown of what's going on. And unfortunately, I think there still are so many unknowns. They might go through a similar situation as that woman, where they might be sent to a dozen different places before they figure out whether they want to actually, you know, isolate them or not and test to see if the results. I got a response back on Twitter the other day after my story posted about Oklahoma developing its testing with the question of, why is this taking so long, or why are they waiting so long to roll out these new tests? Well, it's originally, when this disease was coming out, they called it the novel coronavirus. Novel meaning brand new. This is a brand new strain of virus. It's just something that wasn't even on anyone's radar at that point. So developing all this is going to take some time. Developing a test for it is going to take some time. It does seem like health departments, at least here in Oklahoma, are really responsive, are trying as quickly as they can to get tests in and out. And, you know, only 7 people so far, so that's pretty low numbers. Some states are, you know, testing hundreds already. So it's going to be at different levels depending on the severity of the place.
Right, and a big question in the United States was whether testing for the virus would be free. So what options are there for people who think that they should be tested, and how much is that going to cost?
Yeah, this is an interesting part, because it seems unfair to saddle people with $1,000 of medical bills for, you know, this unexplained phenomenon of a brand new disease. But it's not the test that, what I've been told so far, the test from the CDC and the test being developed for local state health departments is free. It's the hospital care. It is the, you know, the ambulance ride to the hospital, all those things adding up. It's a lengthy stay, usually in isolation in a hospital, that is really making people's bills skyrocket in that regard.
Yeah, and you've touched on this, but what's really freaking people out is, you know, there are a lot of unknowns, and there are, it seems, a lot of misconceptions as well. So I know you are working on an upcoming story about that, maybe what the difference is between the flu and the coronavirus, some myths that are out there. So talk a little bit about that, and you know, how people are feeling really scared and a little hysterical about, oh my gosh, we need to go buy all the masks and, you know, zinc vitamins, and, you know, people are freaking out.
Yeah, really, don't buy a mask. I can tell you that right off the bat right now. It's not going to help. But I spoke with the president of the Oklahoma Medical Research Foundation, Stephen M. Prescott, kind of about this exact thing. There are a lot of misunderstandings out there.
People should be concerned, but this, you know, it seems like we're either have the volume set on zero or all the way to 11, right? Okay, if you want to sort of, you know, semi-self-isolate because you're worried about being in big public events and shaking lots of hands. Well, particularly if you're undergoing cancer chemotherapy, right? And so you say, like, well, that might be prudent, actually. Just don't go where there are lots of people just sort of self-isolate. Mm-hmm. Does that mean you can't see family and friends? No. It just means don't go where there are tens of thousands of strangers, right? And wash your hands frequently, use Purell sanitizer, keep your hands off your face. And so, I mean, those things would be sensible.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming on and explaining to us this, as you said, new phenomenon of the coronavirus.
Yeah, don't forget to wash your hands.
Yeah, wash your hands, very important. But it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
In the last several weeks, racist incidents on school campuses have forced administrators to address inequity and racial insensitivity that students of color have said persisted for too long. The Oklahoman's Tim Willert is joining Nuri and I to talk about the broader impact these incidents have had and what tangible changes we have and have not seen.
The largest example of protests we've seen in recent weeks was when the University of Oklahoma saw students having a three-day sit-in and hunger strike after two professors used the N-word in class. The protest ended last Friday, with administrators agreeing to meet many of the students' demands.
Tim, you helped cover the sit-in at OU for the Oklahoman, so talk a little bit about when you were there, kind of what the atmosphere was like and what students were doing, what you saw.
I saw a lot of energy. There was a lot of energy. There were people sitting around talking. Some people were sleeping. A lot of students were working on laptops. I was just trying to figure out who was running this thing and how I could get a chance to speak to them. But, I mean, there was a lot of – the place was packed. I mean, they were on the first and second – or at least the basement floor, the first floor, and I guess we're somewhere up on the second floor.
In Evans Hall, which was OU's administration building.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, yeah, there were just a lot of people sitting around waiting for, you know, some information because the leaders of BERT, the Black Emergency Response Team, had talked about, you know, they were going to make some new demands, and I was there while they met with administrators, David Surratt, the Vice President for Student Affairs, and Belinda Hippolyte, the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion, and so they met behind closed doors for about an hour or so. And they'd come in and they'd come out, and everybody would, like, all of a sudden it got real quiet, like, okay, they're going to announce something, but that didn't happen. And it took about another 3 hours, and the leaders went behind, you know, they went back to their place and talked about it, and then about 3 hours later they came out and actually made an announcement.
We can announce that most of our demands will be represented within the university's strategic plan that will be presented to the Board of Regents on March 10th through 11th. When it was clear that Provost Kyle Harper would refuse to resign, we gave a new list of demands that would ensure some accountability and checks on the office of the provost to bring about equity.
And can you talk to us about some of the specific demands that they were discussing in those closed doors?
Well, I know that the group had initially issued a list of demands that included, they wanted the university to create a semester-long diversity course and implement mandatory equity training for all faculty. And then BERT also requested a new multicultural center on campus with meeting spaces for marginalized communities. So I think their biggest demand, and correct me if I'm wrong, was they wanted Provost Kyle Harper to resign because they felt like he's been insensitive to several incidents that have happened on campus and hasn't been helpful in their eyes. So they wanted his resignation, and apparently the president said that's not going to happen. So they kind of went back to the drawing board, and that's pretty much why they met with administrators again on Friday. Was, you know, what else can we ask for? And it looks like they wanted a student advisory council for Harper's office created. And they want a review process for senior executive leadership, and they want to be able to have some input. As one of the leaders said, the council will provide insights and advice to the office of the senior president and provost.
Similar to the current VP of Student Affairs Student Advisory Committee, or VPAC, to provide insights and advice to the office of the senior president and provost. Two, regularizing a 360 review process for senior executive leadership reporting to the Office of President. This review process will be starting with Senior Vice President and Provost Kyle Harper this semester.
So, Kayla, let's backtrack. You were a student at OU a short time ago.
Yes, 2015 to 2019.
Yeah, so during the first few months of 2019, multiple blackface incidents happened on campus. That was another set of incidents that really piled on frustration there. Can you talk about the impact this had on the campus environment?
Yeah, so people were outraged. There were protests, there were more talks about needing the type of training and focus on diversity and inclusion that there has been in recent weeks. I think something that really came up was, you know, maybe we haven't made as much progress since SAE in 2015, where fraternity members sang a racist chant. And maybe we haven't made as much progress since then as, you know, the wider community would have us believe. And so, you know, in the time between SAE in 2015 and the blackface incidences in 2019, you know, black students on campus had continued to focus on ways to organize and focus on ways to keep this conversation going. So they were not surprised when those incidents happened, and they were ready to respond, and they did do that. And the campus environment was very tense, as I imagine that it was in the last several weeks. And, you know, you look on social media and a lot of people that maybe don't go to school there but have an opinion about what's going on campus, and they voice those opinions loudly, and there can be some tension, and that was definitely the case in 2019. So that was how that went. But, you know, Andrea, you were following these issues on OU's campus for a few weeks before the most recent protests actually happened. So tell us a little bit about the lead up to the most recent sit-in and what students have been saying to you.
Yeah, so what happened most recently, like we stated before, is you started just a couple weeks ago in early February, where you had a professor, Peter Gade, in the Journalism College, who used the N-word, the full N-word with the hard R at the end, in the middle of class, and he was also using it to compare to the phrase "Okay, Boomer." He equated the offensive nature of the N-word to how offended he was at somebody calling him a boomer. And so I think that led to kind of a twofold set of ways that people took offense to that. And one, students in the classroom didn't think it was acceptable for him to use the N-word at all. And then also trying to compare it to how offensive boomer is, trying to say that that's equally as offensive as the N-word is. So some students said that also was an issue. And so then just a few weeks later, you had another professor who seemed to give a bit of a disclaimer before she said it, but then she read from a historical document and apparently used the N-word multiple times in class. And I think partly the proximity to the previous incident that seemed to really ignite frustrations again, to ultimately leading into this hunger strike and sit-in that happened most recently. I think really the sentiment right now among students is they're really tired of these things happening. It seems like it has piled up and has happened every semester for the past three semesters.
Yeah, there's some incident that goes on OU's campus.
Right. And so it seems like it's just really adding on top of each other rather than viewing each incident in isolation. So I think the frustration only mounted there. And in relation to what the two professors had done, I think students were just getting really exasperated, saying, just don't use that word. Don't say it. It's not acceptable. We don't want to see our educators using that in the classroom. And in the case of the journalism professor, Mr. Gade, he agreed not to teach that class for the rest of the semester. And students specifically requested that they did not want to be in a classroom with him for the rest of the year, just because they felt so uncomfortable with what had happened.
It is definitely tiring. I don't feel that it's my job to educate people as a black person,
right,
when we have access to the internet, mm-hmm, and you can open your mouth and have those discussions with people about their experiences and things like that. But I do think that if me and my community, if we continue to stick together with our allies and hold these faculty and staff members accountable, we definitely can get some things done.
And more broadly, you know, we have seen multiple other instances of racism at other schools in the metro area and students beginning to really speak out on a variety of levels. So, Nuria, what other problems have come up since the most recent OU protests ended?
Yeah, since that happened, we saw the superintendent of Oklahoma City Public Schools apologize for a photo frame at a Black History Month event that people found to be offensive. It's the kind of photo frame that you can pose with and hold up while you're taking pictures at an event, and it was decorated with Black History Month 2020 and painted watermelons on the frame, which is a negative stereotype directed at African Americans. The school district told me that the school nutrition department had brought that to a soul food lunch at Frederick Douglass High School, and that they had used that same frame for other events. But once you put Black History Month on the same frame as watermelons, it takes on a connotation that relates to a negative stereotype that's persisted since really the era of slavery and into the Jim Crow era as well. And then we also saw an incident with a college recruiter from Oklahoma Christian University at Harding Charter Prep High School this past week, where he reportedly had students line up based on the color of their skin, and then ranked students based on whose hair was the most nappy. And students at this high school really took offense to that. The recruiter wrote a column in response to it after he was let go from the university, saying that his only regret was that he didn't have more time to explain himself and the reason that he was doing that. But nevertheless, the university president profusely apologized. He apologized at a campus meeting at OC, and then he went to Harding Charter Prep to apologize to students and employees there as well.
Thank you, Tim, for coming on to talk about this with us, and thank you both for your coverage on this topic for the paper.
In other news, former Vice President Joe Biden won the Democratic primary in Oklahoma on Tuesday with 38.7% of the vote. Voters in seven counties, including Oklahoma County, said yes to Sunday liquor store sales, a measure proposing a 1/8-cent sales tax in Oklahoma City to support public parks failed at the ballot box.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can read all these stories and more every day in The Oklahoman and at oklahoman.com. Check back next Friday for a new episode.